Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about paranormal investigations, equipment, locations, and more with paranormal investigator Vinny Amico. Vinny Amico's first paranormal experience happened when he was just a child, when he saw his grandfather clear as day. However, he had died months earlier. That experience started him on a search for the answer to why. He has been researching and investigating the paranormal for more than four decades. He is the founder of the Paranormal Group, a family of different entities serving the paranormal world, including the Arizona Paranormal Investigation and Research Society, Ghost Hunters Outlet, Arizona Ghost Tours featuring nine locations you can investigate, and more. Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about investigations, advice to novice ghost hunters, equipment, locations, and more with Vinny Amico. Vinny, thanks for being on the show today. And can you tell me a little more about the Paranormal Group of Arizona?
With Paranormal Group, what we are also going to be doing is putting together a directory of paranormal groups, tour companies, and paracons. But I want a place where people can come if they're in need, look in that directory. We're not looking for ghost hunters. We're looking for people that help people that are in need with paranormal afflictions. We don't want somebody just to go out there or meters lit up, REM pod pegged, and that's it. We're all done. Or use an app and scare the hell out of somebody because the stupid app said, you know, what's here? A demon. And that's just happened recently. I had a client that we had to work with, and actually they're now getting divorced because of his situation. He just believes he's possessed and so on and so forth, and he just isn't. It's what was placed in his mind, and it's been building and building and building. And again, now this poor family is in an uproar because ghost hunters went out there and told him that, yeah, there's a demon here. It said that there's a demon.
Oh,
yeah, so
that's dangerous, yeah. Because yes, he could be dealing with mental health issues.
He is. He is. The wife just can't take it anymore. You know, she's, you know, get help. You got to go talk to somebody. We even mentioned that we brought a priest out there just to appease him. It kind of worked for a while, but then he hears a noise or he thinks he sees a shadow. And it's usually, you know, at night when you're fatigued and you're, you know, you're in a different state of consciousness. Trying to explain things to him, giving him the actual reason, you know, possible reason. We're not going to like completely discount it, but it's just such a super, super rarity. She just can't take it anymore. So it's a shame. But the thing that pushed this guy over the edge was this other team going in there. And, you know, they're using their cell phones to do stuff. And every time they might be getting an incoming text or whatever the case may be, or Facebook Live, and it's making equipment go off. And this guy's flipping out. And then they do the app. And, you know, what is here? Is anything here with us or is spirit with us? And, you know, I'm a demon. It just put him over the edge. So, you know, it's unfortunate. So I'm very careful about who actually is listed on this site. One of the questions that we ask when somebody wants to come on board as an affiliate team, we want to see their YouTube. So if I go up there and I see every other title is a demon touched my left foot, demon touched my right foot, demon touched my left, you know, it's like, that's enough. We don't want you on because you're all about the, you know, the jump scare and that type of stuff. And you're looking to bring in an audience for your YouTube so you can monopolize on it. And that's not what we're about. Paranormal Group or other two entities. Basically, we have Paramico, which is a production company we put together. We're finally getting filming done. It takes a lot of work to get everything coordinated. I am retired from the post office, so it's very hard to get the entire group together. So I've been out and talking to historians and actually getting a lot of that type of stuff into the can. So then all we have to do is the investigation part, then meld it together. And we're going to try to produce at least eight episodes on the Southwest. We help right now nine different locations in Arizona. And AZ Ghost Tours is a fundraising arm. I make money via the Ghost Hunters outlet. So I don't need to make money off of these locations, and all that we collect goes to the locations. And we don't pack 20 people into a 2,000 square foot, you know, place. It's usually 6 to 8 people, some of them max at 10. So that's what we're trying to do. And it's been very successful. It's growing very well.
Well, what I found interesting was I reached out initially about the Gila, the Gila. 1910 Gila County Jail. And I still don't know if I'm saying that correctly.
You got it that time.
Okay, thank you. I'm trying. I love to talk about old haunted jails and prisons. I'm fascinated by that. But then once you and I started talking back and forth on email and I looked at your website, I was like, you've got multiple locations. Mm-hmm. Then there's you who's been investigating for 45 years.
I'm going to say more research for 45 years than investigating, because there wasn't, you know, there wasn't like a page listing for paranormal investigators or anything like that. It was all word of mouth. Actually, my first, I'm going to say, investigation was in 1978. I was working for the post office at night, and we had a lot of single moms. And, you know, it's a boring job, and you're sitting there throwing mail all night, and you talk to the guy next to you, and you kind of get to know him. And I friended this one guy named Earl, and all of a sudden, one day in the conversation, ghosts came up. You believe in ghosts? Yeah, you know, I saw a ghost. You saw a ghost? I saw a ghost. And we started talking. This was an old building in Paterson, New Jersey, and right next to it was a train trestle. And in, I think, the 20s or 30s, whenever it was, but a postal worker was killed in a robbery. They were robbing the mail going up to the train. So the story is, he's down in the basement of the post office, and it's old, you know, catacombs down there. He's down there. He haunts the basement. So what did Earl and I do during our lunchtime? We went down in the basement.
Of course you did.
You know, so people are like, they call this the ghost guys. And then one of our coworkers, she came up to us and she goes, look, you know, I believe in this stuff. My son, he's 7 years old. He thinks he sees things. I'm not going to tell him, you know, it's his imagination. Is there any way that you guys may be able to come over? So we went over there, not to, you know, we didn't have meters or hardly anything. It was a compass, a Radio Shack cassette recorder, Polaroid land camera. You know, we had bells, we had flour, that type of stuff. But it was more for this child to have an ear for him to speak his mind, because I went through the same experience when I was young and nobody believed me. So it was helping him understand things that are going on, etc. So is that an investigation? I guess it could be classified mm-hmm. as one, but it was more of helping people. And that's how it got started. Then one person told somebody else, and then we got a group of people together. It was like four or five of us. We weren't a team. It was just a call list. Hey, we need to go to Johnny's cousin's sister's brother's bar in Teaneck. They think they got some stuff going on. Are you available Saturday the 5th? No. Call the next guy. How? Blah, blah, blah. Available Saturday the 5th. Yeah. All of a sudden, we get two or three people, and then we go and meet out there, and we try to see if we can find out what's causing the noises, what's causing these types of things that staff or people are saying is going on. So that's what we did. Did we do a lot of it? No, it was, you know, maybe five, six, seven times a year. As I met my wife, Pam, and she was in a theater department. She was building sets and lighting and all. So I really enjoyed working and doing that stuff. So her and I started a stage lighting company called Wizard Productions in like 81, 82. So we started servicing the tri-state area, and we worked on a lot of old theaters. So what happens in all the old theaters? Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a ghost story. Mm-hmm. And then we start, you know, well, you know, we kind of investigate and we check things out. Oh, you got to come up. So our phone would ring at the office thinking it was a sale or a rental or something to do with lighting. It's like, hey, can you come to your theater and check out our ghosts? So we kidded around, we're going to put business cards together with, you know, stage lighting, sales, rentals, and ghosts. So that we did a lot of, going to a lot of theater work. And, you know, we mixed in some of the actual, you know, family locations, you know, private locations. But until really Ghost Hunters came out in 2004 and the public realized that there are people that do these types of things. Yeah, the Warrens were out, but it wasn't widely spread. Television, the internet, all that really was blossoming back then in 2004. And that's where things started to pick up and it really expanded.
Do you mind if I ask you about what happened to you when you were a child?
Oh, yeah. We're here in Arizona now, but we had a summer house in a town called Middleville. It was a fieldstone house, three bedrooms. My father and my uncle actually built them themselves. I never met my uncle. He passed before I was born. Never met my aunt, passed before he was born. And we used to go up there in the summertime and, you know, weeks at a clip sometimes in the summer. My grandfather was born in Italy. He lost his leg in World War II, and he couldn't speak much English, but he loved going up there because it reminded him of Italy. So he would be up there, and I would be playing and doing stuff, and he kind of, you know, want a hug, and I have to go by him. He's got a scraggly beard, and he stunk because he smoked these stogie cigars. They were stinky, stinky things, and, you know, I just hated going around on a guy, but he died one winter, and I was 6 years old, I believe, you know, I was six, and we went up to Middleville that summer for a couple of weeks. It was in June. And I was playing on the back porch, and I smell this smell, and I'm like, I know the smell, you know, I know it. And I turned around, and there he was standing there. Now, it wasn't glowing or iridescent or anything. He looked like he was just standing there, like a real person, minus the one leg. And he was smiling at me, and I picked myself up, and I bolted inside the house, and I grabbed my mother. My mom, oh, grandpa's outside. She's like, no, he's not. He passed away, honey. No, he's outside. I'm dragging her out there. And she's like, oh, it's your imagination. Obviously, he wasn't there. It's your imagination. Stop. People are going to, you know, think you're crazy and put you in the padded room and blah, blah, blah. So she didn't give me the time of day. I knew what I saw. I knew what I saw. So as I got older, in my teens, I started to research paranormal, read stuff, you know, about the Warrens and, you know, a lot of other investigators and a lot of activity, parapsychology. So I realized that I did see actually something. And that's what got me perked, and that's what got me going.
I think it's interesting, too, because you smelled him first.
Yeah,
and that's an unmistakable smell.
Yeah, unmistakable. And like I said, it wasn't like he wasn't black and white. He wasn't like fading in and out, translucent. He was almost physically solid there, minus the one leg that was missing. When he lost him in the war, he had an artificial limb. It was him. I wanted to get my mother because she really cried a lot when he passed. You know, I'm like, Mom, he's outside. Come on, come on, come on. And she's, no, he's not. He passed. He died. So it was kind of interesting. Now, back in that Fieldstone house, my wife Pam and I used to go up there for weekends. Like, I get out of work. I work nights. I would get out 8 o'clock in the morning. We would drive up there. It took about an hour and a half from where we lived in Patterson. And I would take a nap for 2-3 hours. And she would hang out in the front room and she would read a book. Well, she comes flying into the bedroom. She's jumping on top of me. And I look, I got to get some sleep first. So she goes, no, there's a woman out in that chair. So she drags me out into the living room area. And there was it's a Fieldstone fireplace. And right next to the fireplace is a bent wood rocker. She goes, there was a woman sitting right there. I'm like, okay, you know, yeah, I believe you. You know, I understand. About a month later, we were at our house. My mother found a bunch of old photos, and we're going through. It was all photos of Middleville, and my wife stands up. She goes, that's her, that's her. That was a woman that was sitting in a chair. It was my aunt who passed away that I never met. So she actually saw the woman sitting there, and she is sensitive, just opened everything up. So I don't know if that gave us an additional bond, but, you know, about 3-4 years later, we got married. I don't think it was because of paranormal, but it was another interest that we had. You know, we had the stage lighting and everything else. We grew up 2 blocks away from each other. This just kind of blossomed and, you know, became a relationship and we got married. But that's kind of the background of how it all kind of went down. When I came out here in 2008, it just changed. You know, it was everywhere. You know, 2008, Ghost Adventures came out. Everybody had a team of matching T-shirts. You know, and it was just like crazy. Everybody was, you know, investigating. So I missed the people I had back east because, you know, they were a solid group of people. They weren't ghost hunters. They were there to help people. What do you mean you have sounds? We're going out there with carpenter squares and framing squares and levels. Oh, you know, your door is actually out of frame. That's why this is happening. Or your cabinets are not level. That's why the doors open at night, you know, because of somebody bangs next door. It's causing a vibration and making the door move. So we used to go to try to figure out what was going on. When I came out here, I didn't have those people. So I reached out. There was a couple of sites where you can, you know, a list of teams. And at that point, I had like 30 years in. One group got back to me. It was J. Marie Yates. And, we did some work with them. We ended up talking to somebody else, and they said, why don't you check out this thing called Meetup. And I never heard of Meetup. So 2011 was my first time we went to the Gila jail. It was myself, my wife, and another couple. It's just the four of us. And the place totally blew me away, and I loved it. A lot of activity in the jail. It just seemed to be welcoming. Went back about 3 or 4 months later, almost to the point where they recognized this. It said my name outright on an EVP on a camera, so that was really crazy. And we just kept going back and going back with groups by ourselves. In 2017, I decided, you know, I really loved the place, and there was a lot of places that I investigated over the years, but things were being cut back. The state and the cities were cutting back on funding for a lot of the museums and all. So we decided to start doing these fundraisers. And that's where AZ Ghost Tours was born. And now we're up there once a month doing public events, but we also do private events. And I'm getting a lot of people from throughout the United States. We just had a guy from Wisconsin that was just here. It's just been fun that way, because I'm more like a caretaker for all these guys. And we're there to help them. We bring equipment up. I get to meet new people, see their experiences, share the evidence we have, see what they have, see if it's kind of jiving. And that's been a lot of fun. So right now we have 9 different locations, different historic societies that we help out with.
I really feel like there are a lot of places around the country that would be totally closed down or torn down if it weren't for people like you doing these investigations and raising money to help keep these places' doors open and help keep them standing.
But it's also a catch-22, because I'm sure you like Halloween, right? You love the kids coming to the door, all the costumes, but you wouldn't like it every night, every weekend. So you got to sort of be careful while, yes, you are doing events and doing things to try to keep these places afloat. Whatever may be there spirit-wise may not enjoy it all the time, or specific spirits will not. So you got to kind of like balance it out where you can't just have stuff all the time. We go up, again, like I said, once a month, and maybe I get 2 or 3 other teams going to that location that come and visit. So it's not really all that bad. But there's some people out here that do events, and they're there like every week, every weekend, and it's just way too much. If you were to talk to anybody, you know, what's haunted in Arizona, you would hear Jerome, the Grand Hotel. You would hear the San Carlos in Phoenix. You would hear the Copper Queen in Bisbee. Those places constantly, every month, things are going on. Things are going on there. People are investigating. So it gets a little over the top. So we try to keep it a little bit reeled in here with some of these locations. In April, we do a Paracon up in Globe. And we offer, this year we're going to offer 7 different locations for paranormal investigations at night. Right now we're trying to reach out to Chris Williams. She lives in Arizona. So we're trying to get local talent, which we have over the past 2 years, but now trying to get some people that have been on television or have series on right now. We reached out to Ben Hansen. He's seen what his schedule is going to be like, because he comes out here, Superstition Mountain Museum. They have tons of activity with UFOs. So he was actually out here a little while ago doing UFO investigating. And they actually have a camera. I don't know if you ever seen stuff like this. I haven't. I was just told about it, where this thing can actually track things in the sky and identify what they are, which is absolutely incredible. But he knows the area. He wouldn't mind coming out here, because then he would just roll in and do something up there as well. So we're trying to get that schedule together, but that's where we're looking at to do. So we're trying to keep it still grounded, where we don't have to charge $100 for people to investigate with a specific guest speaker. So we don't break their bank. I mean, gas is expensive, you know, with the economy and different things, you know, people are hurting a little bit. So we want to try to keep it as low as possible. So we're trying to get people to help us out. What I'm offering, because we have access to a lot of these locations, some people, you know, they do have a series, they have YouTube channels where, look, come in, do our event, stay for the week. Here's a couple of places you can stay. And I'll come in and I'll let you guys investigate these 4 other locations for your YouTube channel. So you would normally be paying $250 to $500 per location. I'll give that to you for free. So that's what we're trying to kind of work out with some of these people. And, you know, it's logistics. It's April. Beautiful time to be in Arizona. It's absolutely gorgeous weather. It's not hot. It's not cold. But this fundraiser last year, we did really well with it. And we want to kind of double what we're doing. We have two new locations that have never been investigated by the public. So we're looking forward to that. So it's a lot of fun for me. It's a lot of work to, you know, put these things on. But, you know, all this money goes to Up and Globe, the Globe Main Street program, which is a historical society that constantly, you know, puts the money back into these locations to renovate them. Next door, we have the 1906 courthouse. That almost was knocked down in the 70s, but the town got together, the city bought it, and they pitched in and they made this thing. They spent over $1 million and change just to bring it somewhat up to snuff. And it's a beautiful location. Globe's a very small town.
Now, are all the locations that you have where people can go investigate? Because I saw five different locations on your website.
There are. Well, on that one, yeah. But in our AZ ghost tours, there's actually nine.
Okay.
Acadia Ranch down in Oracle is another place that we do. The Superstition Mountain and Apache Junction, we also do. Up in the Globe, Miami area, we have Bullion Plaza, the YMCA. We have a 1908 brothel, which we're not doing as much anymore because a woman sold her business. She still owns the building, so she's not there. So she normally likes to be somewhat on premise, so it's not as often as possible. A new building, it's an old, it's a three-story building built in 1910. It's up, third level was an Elks Lodge, and the basement area was a mortuary. And there was all stuff in between. It was actually, currently there is an antique shop in there, and that's going to be completely out. Once they get the bathrooms working, then we'll end up doing events in there. There's another place where I think that was 1912 or 1918. That was an old bakery. So there's a lot of great places up in the area. And these are old mining towns. This is what it was about. The 1910 Gila Jail, to get a sheriff in there, they actually gave him quarters inside the jail with a working bath. That's why I really wish we had capability of doing visual, because I would have loved being able to walk your guests through and let them see exactly what the jail is all about. So it's a fabulous place. Anybody that comes to Arizona, look us up. We'll get together. We'll bring you up there. It's just a phenomenal place.
At some of these locations that you go to frequently, do you find it's different there day to day? Because you were talking about, you know, you don't want to just bring in people constantly.
The people and the energy. You know, honestly, the public events are very difficult because if you get one bad apple in there, it's going to ruin it for the entire night. We actually do a lot of public-private events now. We have a group from Geico Insurance. They do something with us every 3 months. We just had a high school. They have a paranormal club, and we just had them up at the YMCA up in Miami, and that was, you know, that worked out very, very well. So having private groups, it's their group. They're kind of behaving a little bit different because, again, with the public, you know, who's going up there because their girlfriend wants to go and he doesn't believe in this and he ruins it for the rest of the people, or just has that negative energy that will cause things to shut down. You know, just like anything else, you walk into a party and there's an idiot over there and he's, you know, talking a lot, blah, 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 blah. You kind of tend to stay away from him because you don't want to engage him because you don't like him. Same thing with, you know, paranormal spirits that may be there. They don't like somebody. They're not going to make themselves present. So
I like that analogy. I do think that's so true. When you go into a party, one guy can ruin the whole party.
Yep.
We've all met that guy. We've all been at that party.
Yep. And we all left those parties. So
it wasn't any fun.
But, you know, the places, again, we don't overdo things. Some of the locations we do every other month, some of them every 3 months. We also run one-day paranormal events called Paranormal Day. We just did one in September for the YMCA in Miami. She just spent $50,000. She had problems with foundation. She had to put a new huge beam in there. She had to do some plumbing work because some things broke. She doesn't do much. You know, she owns the building. She's trying to bring it back. So we ended up running a paranormal day for her. We made her a little over $1,000. So it kind of helps where she is not a historical society. She's just a person like you and me that fell in love with this place, put her money into it. She's owned it for 20 years, and she's been fixing it up over the years. But in the meantime, insurance, electric, taxes, you know, it takes a big toll. So the events we do up there really, really help her out. So we're kind of pleased. And again, not just historical sites, but people that find a building, fall in love with it, and want to bring it back to what it was and put their heart and soul and sweat and money into it. We love helping those people as well.
In these locations that you go into, because you, I'm going to guess, have been into these locations a lot of times, like the jail.
Yeah.
What are some, like, let's use the jail for an example. Have you had any personal experiences in there, I'm going to guess?
Constantly. Hasn't happened. Past 2 years, I don't really know why, but one of the things I used to do was when I walk into the jail, and I still do, I go in, I say, hey, it's Vinny, I'm here again. And I used to hear, boom. Now, it wasn't metal, like a cell door slamming. It was more like if you were to slam the side of the jail to metal walls, that hollow boom, you would get this boom, like it was, hello, you're back. I would go up onto, it's three levels. I would go up to the top of the first level, up on the stairs, and I would sit there, and I'd just talk. Like, hey, you know, I broke a tooth this week, you know, I kind of hurt. I'm not going to go to the dentist because I hate going to the dentist. And look, we have 12 people coming tonight. We have 8 people coming tonight. I tell them about myself. I ask, how have you been? Is there anything I can do for you? You know, is there anything I can bring the next time or maybe go get for you? Do you want some fresh flowers here? Would you like some strawberries? I just talk like I talk to somebody. And I think it makes a huge difference because anytime that it's just two or three of us, or if I'm in there alone, the activity increases. When we bring people in, it tends to calm it down a little bit because they're not sure what's going on. I do reassure that I'm there. I'm not going to let anybody, you know, be disrespectful, cause any harm and any discomfort, but they're still kind of reserved. But yes, over the years, the rapport has been built. It's a very responsive location.
Because when you think about a jail, I'm assuming there could be the jailers could still have their spirits there, the inmates, sure. People who were there. I think it would have an interesting energy to it.
It does. And also, I think a lot is the investigators themselves may not be just reaching out. You know, when you open that up, like people talk about Ouija boards, you're opening up a portal, so on and so forth. I think any type of incantation that you're doing, any type of intent to communicate is kind of like a beacon. Now, it might not be that specific location that you may be drawing a spirit from. Maybe it's somebody from my personal life that has been coming in. Mm. You know, so we really don't know. Is it all of our psychic energy that has built up all the investigators like Waverly in all these places where tons of people go? Is it that psychic energy of those investigators, that intent that now have built its own type of entity, like the Philip experiment up in Canada in, I think, the 70s, where parapsychologists, they met once a week and they kind of built this individual. His name is Philip. He's born in the 16, whatever. And they just every week, they just added to almost where this thing had its own personality. And they developed it that way. So maybe that's something that goes on, you know, in all these different locations. And I think maybe because of the amount of times I'm up there and, like I said, the rapport that's built, it engages, it mm-hmm. goes. But who knows who it could be? Is it purgatory?
Right.
Was that the worst place that you ever were in your life? And now that's where you spend your purgatory, in the jail? We have no idea. There's no answers to anything. You know, that's the thing about this field. It's all speculation.
Yep. So. What about, because I had never heard of Superstition Mountain. I don't know how. I had never heard of that. Now that I dove into it after seeing it on your website, I was surprised that I'm not familiar with that. And it looks amazing.
Story of the Lost Dutchman.
I'm sorry.
Basically, a Lost Dutchman. This was a miner. He's found the mother lode out there. It's tons of wealth that are supposed to be in those mountains. The Apaches were in that area. Incas were in that area. They were giant. And this is, there's a gentleman by the name of Steve. He works for the museum. And whenever we do our paranormal events, we do ghost tours first before we do the investigation at night. And he leads it, and you know, we're with him. And he tells the people stories. Here, this was this, this was that. And oh, by the way, up in the mountains, there were giants. I'm like, there were giants. There were little people. There were Incas. They found all this different stuff. It's just an incredible place. Look up Lost Dutchman Mine, and you'll find all the information. I can't remember the guy's name right now, but supposedly he found a mother lode, hit it. There was a map that was built, and people came out here looking for this gold. A lot of people lost their lives up in the mountain itself. In 2015, 16, something around there, there was a plane accident. Someone crashed into the mountain. It was three adults and three children. And they actually brought some of the wreckage onto the museum's property, and they have a memorial bench for those people that passed. We get a lot of activity up there. We think it is the kids that do come back. The place, the energy, it's just incredible. And the Apaches, that mountain is very sacred to them. There's actually an Apache exhibit up there that was just blessed. And they asked us whenever we do events not to go up into that area. So, obviously we abide by their wishes and we kind of avoid that section. But that is how sacred this area was to them. But look up Lost Dutchman Gold or Lost Dutchman Mine, and you'll get tons of information about the area.
And you have mentioned UFO sightings there as well. Yeah. Has there been quite a few of those?
There has been quite, Arizona, we had the Phoenix Lights, a few years back. So yeah, this is a very open area. There are some places you can go in Arizona and drive for 2 hours without seeing a speck of civilization. So all wide open. We do have Luke Air Force Base here. Utah is right above us, Nevada, New Mexico. So who knows what the government may or may not be testing in this area? We don't know. But yes, there is a lot of different things that are up in our sky that people have captured over the years. And supposedly that Superstition Mountain is another place where they see a lot of sightings.
So when you do investigations, do you go into the mountain area or is it more the museum?
Just on the museum property. They have 3 or 4 acres and they have different exhibits there. One is the church. It's the Elvis Church. When you go inside, a lot of people get married there and they have receptions and so on. But there's a big figurine of Elvis staying up there, like a full-size figurine. But that's the Elvis Chapel. They have something called the stamp mill, which was something that would crush the rock and ore. And it's 8 different items that go up and down. They call it the Widowmaker because if something got stuck or got jammed, somebody would have to go in. They wouldn't shut production down. You would just have to go in there with your hand and try to free it out. Who lost limbs? Who, got crushed inside that machine? That came from New Mexico. That has a lot of activity and weird stuff going on there. A lot of small buildings that were brought into the area, a lot of mining equipment that was brought onto the museum site. So there's a lot of energies that seem to be trapped into these things, which is really interesting. The place is just, it's just a great location. My granddaughter's 4, and these are the types of places I want them to be available for her to see, to feel, and to touch. Now, you might have seen the Grand Canyon in pictures. Doesn't do it any justice. Once you see the Grand Canyon in person, it's just incredibly awed by it. Same thing with these locations. You can't really experience it unless you're physically there. You're physically picking up and touching something. That's why these places are important to me, and that's why I want to keep them available.
And that wraps up part 1 of our conversation with Vinnie Amico. For more information, visit paranormalgroup.org or go to azghosttours.org. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, you'll get everything commercial free. Become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free. You can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you very much for listening.